In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Welcome. This is the iSpy Radio Show, helping you every week to keep an eye on big government. You know, there's a famous line from Hamlet, "Something is rotten in Denmark." Then, like now, Shakespeare was pointing to corruption among those in power. How the powerful had manipulated and schemed, pretending to be loving, but something else in secret. Claudius had killed his own brother, the king, and then married his brother's wife to take the crown. At the beginning of the play, he seems like a good king and acts lovingly towards Hamlet. It's only when the ghost appears that we begin to learn the truth. There is a darkness that permeates the extreme left, and we are seeing it more and more. You cannot be the party of killing the unborn and not have it impact your soul. If you've listened to I Spy, you know this. But now it's really coming to the light. And it's all about power, doing anything to gain it, and then a willingness to do anything with it. Look at Harvey Weinstein. And we will with our first guest, James Herson. He used his power and threatened innocent victims into silence. Look at Obama, using the power of the government to attack political opposition. How he tried to sue people and nonprofits that dared to disagree with him on global warming. Not because of science, but because it interfered with their plans to steal trillions of taxpayer dollars. And we'll look at the left using the legal system to attack their opponents with Dr. Timball in the second half of our show. Look at Hillary. Obama left the Democrat Party millions in debt and vulnerable, and Hillary used her ill-gotten cash to swoop in and buy their soul. Something is rotten in Denmark. Something is rotten in Hollywood, and that seeps into our culture and our politics. And Hillary is the perfect living example of that, willing to do anything, selling American uranium, looking the other way on sexual predators, taking money from the cesspool of Hollywood, all to gain power, so she could tell you how to live. It's no wonder conservatives aren't welcome in Hollywood, especially Christian conservatives. I'd like to welcome now James Herson. He is the New York Times bestselling author of Tales from the Left Coast. He is also a pundit for Newsmax.com and author of the popular weekly column, The Left Coast Report, where he takes a humorous poke at all things Hollywood. James, it's good to talk to you again.
It's great to be with you.
So let's lead off by the whole Harvey Weinstein fiasco. Why did it take so long for people to expose what this horrid, abusive man was doing to actresses?
Well, you know, it's the same. It was a different time. And Harvey had tremendous power. Just to give you an idea how much power Harvey Weinstein had, during a 15-year period where he ran his company, Miramax Films, they were able to get 250 Oscar nominations. And out of those 250, they won 60. That is unmatched in the industry. He was known as the master of the Oscar campaign, and he was also known as someone that could make or break a career, and based on the allegations and the correlations, he broke a couple of careers, with two in particular, Rosanna Arquette and Mira Sorvino. But the important thing is what has happened since Harvey Weinstein. By the way, a lot of people ask, well, why did it happen now? And it happened now because of a Shakespearean story of an actor who's been talked about a lot lately, who had terrible allegations against him, is Woody Allen. Woody Allen's career was all but over. Mia Farrow, in her separation from Woody Allen, accused him of molesting a 7-year-old, and he ended up running away with his adopted daughter. And there was one film executive who brought back Woody Allen's career. That was Harvey Weinstein. And in the household was a 5-year-old child. And his name was Ronan Farrow. And Ronan Farrow grew up to become an investigative reporter. He was with NBC. He developed this story over a period of a year, a very well-developed story about Harvey Weinstein, very well-sourced. NBC refused it because of power reasons, because the head of NBC News was also a screenwriter. And he took it to The New Yorker, and because it was known that it was going to come out, and because it had really terrible allegations in it, the New York Times released a sanitized version to help Harvey Weinstein, but it didn't stop the avalanche that now occurs. But that is spreading throughout Hollywood.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, it's getting to be that the Walk of Fame is turning into a Hall of Shame. There's so many big names that it's hard to keep up on it. It seems to be that there's another name every few hours, it almost seems. One of the people that recently is a filmmaker named James Toback, who most of the people never heard of him, but he's a director, filmmaker, best associated. He was nominated for an Oscar for the movie Bugsy back in the 90s. He's done a lot of movies since. He apparently, there were some accusers, and LA Times came out with a story where 38 women accused him of various forms of improper conduct. That number has now grown to over 300 women. Mm. And this is the kind of thing that's going on, just engulfing the Hollywood community. Well deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, why do you think this is so pervasive in Hollywood? I mean, it just, you know, as you said, the list just grows exponentially every single day. But why is this sort of thing tolerated?
Well, here's the thing. When I think about it, first of all, every glamour business has this problem. Hmm. And that's because of the disparaging power between those who can give opportunity and those who seek it. So there's always been in Hollywood this thing that we've been called the casting couch. And what that referred to was the exchange of intimate relations for career help. Marilyn Monroe talked about it. She engaged in it. It's been around since Hollywood began. But what we're talking about with Harvey Weinstein and others is not the casting couch, because what it involves is groping, grabbing, sexual assault, and rape. That is not the casting couch. That is criminal behavior. And that's what we're seeing being alleged over and over again. I mean, the most recent one opens up a whole Pandora's box. Kevin Spacey, who's now is falling from grace much faster than Harvey Weinstein did. He has become persona non grata in Hollywood. And Kevin Spacey, because he's accused of committing a sexual assault on a 14-year-old,
yes,
male upon boy, that brings up the unspeakable subject of pedophilia.
Yes.
And so you ask, how...
Well, and in fact, let's go ahead and take a break there, because we would like to talk to you about that pedophilia that's going on there in Hollywood. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with James Herzen on that after this. And welcome back. We're talking with James Herzen about the ongoing revelations of apparently rampant sexual abuse going on in Hollywood that everyone knew about, but no one ever did anything about. And going into that break, we were starting to talk about the allegations of pedophilia. So why don't you go ahead and continue your thoughts there with Kevin Spacey?
Well, I think that's the next sort of big area. Corey Feldman has been making the rounds, going on talk shows, talking about his own experiences in that. There's been a documentary made on it. There are some big names who were implicated, and Corey Feldman says many of them have not been revealed yet, and he wants to reveal them. And I think it's a cesspool.
Yes.
That what we're talking about is a cesspool of the most reprehensible behavior imaginable. Mm-hmm. From the people who tell Americans how they should behave, how they should drive, how they should live, who they should vote for.
Yes,
and they
yes.
do it in award shows on a regular basis. This is the biggest blow to the Hollywood brand in the history of entertainment. And I said it in an earlier segment, it was well-deserved. This is, I believe, has a direct relationship to the attitude that Hollywood has towards anything that relates to standards of behavior.
Yes.
Hollywood, in modern day Hollywood, has a libertine lifestyle. They snicker about it. They make fun of Heartland America's values. And their content, by the way, reflects that. Much of their content is valueless. It doesn't take place in a moral universe, and they lose all of the dynamics of storytelling that used to be a part of Hollywood. And so, and I think this emphasizes that. But moreover, if you have a community of people and they reject the notion of standards, they reject religion, they reject morals, then we shouldn't be surprised that they're going to live without morals and standards.
Yeah.
And that's the product of that in an industry where there's a level of power and leverage that doesn't exist in other industries, because there's so many people trying to make it in a very, very difficult business environment. And somebody says to them, well, here, I'll strike you a bargain. Or they say the bargain is, after they grope and commit criminal sexual assault, they say, if you don't say anything, I won't destroy you, which is kind of what Harvey Weinstein did to a lot of these women. So it's well-deserved. And the good part is that the layer of the veneer is being peeled off and we see the filth lying below it. And so Americans can make their choice. And I think they are. I think box office is falling dramatically. And mm-hmm. I think Hollywood has been severely harmed by this.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think that's the thing that really upsets a lot of people, as you see in the Heartland, is not only does Hollywood have that lack of morals and values in so many of their films, but they openly mock people who do have those values.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, they've been doing that on these award shows and on various talk shows where they appear, and in the media, and in the trades, even in Hollywood. It's been, you know, I work in the industry, and I've had people, you know, because of the work I do in the media and the writing I've done, who just won't work with me, period, because of my views. These are people who profess diversity and multiculturalism, which are phony values. They really don't, because they're not applied to everyone. It's just so it's a situation where I think, you know, Americans now see that what they suspected about Hollywood is not even as bad as it is. And I think that's part of the age of Trump, is that what we see is all kinds of people's masks being pulled off and all kinds of institutions being revealed for what we suspected them to be. That includes institutions in the sports media, political institutions, the news media, and the entertainment media.
Well, I agree with you that I think the whole pedophilia thing is something that's the next big shoe to drop. Do you have a sense of how large this is? I mean, we had hundreds of women now coming forward on the sexual harassment and abuse. What do you expect to see in terms of how many young child stars are going to start coming forward to talk about their abuse by these Hollywood heavyweights?
Well, I can only make that judgment by what people like Corey Feldman and others have said. Again, it exceeds expectations because there's nothing that our normal society abhors and hates more than someone taking advantage of an innocent child or young person. And unfortunately, there are people, and in vivid detail, these that have been described, that just have no respect or understanding for decency and innocence. And I'm afraid it's far more widespread than we would ever think.
Well, I guess one of the things that pops to mind is how far does this go? I mean, you look at who Hollywood hangs around with, and they hang around with an awful lot of Democrat politicians. And so if this sort of abuse is going on and sexual predation is going on within Hollywood, it's not much of a stretch of an imagination to see this leaching into the Democrat Party. I mean, there are certainly rumors of this sort of thing happening there.
Well, we've seen it, of course, in the White House when Bill Clinton was in the White House. What could be more disgusting than someone engaging in what was a sexual assault, in a sense, because of the leverage involved in the Oval Office, and at times while supposedly conducting America's business? I think the difference, you know, how does Bill Clinton get away with that kind of behavior and then this host of women that accused him, and he's still held up as this wonderful liberal icon? And I think the difference, of course, is the social media.
Yeah.
And but you know, that's a whole other discussion about Bill Clinton. But I do agree with you. The Democrats are implicated because there's too many photos of Harvey Weinstein standing next to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and a whole host of Democratic personages, and showing up for every Democrat cause.
Yes.
And giving money, especially to people like Planned Parenthood. And, you know, he tried, Harvey tried to use his liberal bona fides as a defense. One of the things he tried to do was say, oh, well, you know, I'm going to go after the NRA, everybody.
Yeah.
So treat me like Bill Clinton, which didn't happen. Same thing with Kevin Spacey. Kevin Spacey, when confronted with his accuser, issued an apology, but in the same written statement, he came out as gay, which infuriated all the gay organizations because they viewed it as if he was associating an accusation of pedophilia with being gay.
Yes, yeah, and wasn't that
so
something?
That's why his fall is so rapid, because, you know, all the spokespeople for gay organizations and gay personalities have gone on the social media to condemn Kevin Spacey. He has committed an unpardonable sin.
Yes.
And he's already now, his move is, even today, his publicists say that he's out there going to seek rehab, which is, you know, the way to get an indulgence.
Yeah, exactly right. The ultimate indulgence there. You know, it's kind of funny, though, with the whole Bill Clinton thing. Maybe some of what's going on through these Hollywood heads there is that since they didn't see the left condemn Bill Clinton, I guess that kind of behavior was okay. Let's go ahead and take a break. Everyone stay with us. Speaking of Democrats, when we come back, we'll be talking about Donna Brazile. And welcome back. Continuing our discussion with James Hurston. He is the New York Times bestselling author of Tales from the Left Coast, also a pundit for Newsmax.com, and author of the popular weekly column, The Left Coast Report. And breaking on Thursday is this explosive article about Donna Brazile talking about some of the behind the scenes machinations of the DNC and also the funding that Hillary brought in. And what was your initial blush of this?
Well, look, this is another in the huge piles of scandal, corruptions, and dishonesty swirling around Hillary Clinton. And this is bad for Debbie Wasserman Schultz and for the Democrat Party in general, because Donna Brazile is singing, you know, the classic singing like a canary. She's decided to tell all, ironically, Donna Brazile, the person who illicitly gave Hillary the questions before a debate. Makes me wonder, where was she when I was in college? She could have given me the answers to the exam before.
Yes.
But she's saying, And to make it really simple for your listeners, what Donna Brazile is saying, the Democratic Party, which is run by the Democratic National Committee, was taken over by Hillary Clinton and her machine in August of 2015. That is 1 year before, 1 year before Hillary Clinton became the nominee. That is before any primary took place. What that means is that Bernie Sanders had no chance. No matter what, Hillary was in control of the party. And this was done through a fundraising agreement where two entities controlled by Hillary Clinton paid off the debts of the DNC, which were relatively small in comparison with the DNC. The debts were accrued by a Barack Obama, who's very good at accruing debt, you know, yes. more debt than all the presidents in history combined.
Yes.
So he left them in debt. That's predictable. And as an excuse to try to get Debbie Wasserman Schultz off the hook, Brazil said, well, they were desperate. They had to do this deal with Hillary. In other words, Hillary's going to take her entities, give money to the DNC to pay their debts, and in return, we sell our soul.
Yeah.
That in return part doesn't fly. There's no excuse for it. It's illegal. We have something called the Federal Election Commission, the FEC, that is there to investigate wrongdoing like this. In America, you know, it's funny how the Democrats are talking about our democracy constantly and how Russia hacked our democracy. And yet Hillary did hack the democracy. This is what we're seeing all around as Hillary points fingers at others, that it turns out she's doing what she accuses others of doing.
Yes.
She's colluding with the Russians. She's selling out the national security of the United States. She's paying for the opposition research where a foreign agent gets Russian sources and creates a fake dossier. She's doing that. So it just added to the list of scandals. And unfortunately, the American people are looking and saying, how is it possible that we see, for example, a person being prosecuted by the special counsel Robert Mueller for lying about the timing of a meeting that he had, and Hillary Clinton can lie and can cheat and can undermine America, and there is no accountability for the Clintons.
No.
And this is this really undermines anybody's faith in the justice system, in the American system right now.
Well, speaking of the system, that's one of the things that really jumped out at me about the Donna Brazil article. And what came across there is that there's this notion of what Hillary did wasn't illegal, but it certainly wasn't ethical. And that's, I think, so much of what is wrong there with the Democrats, is they place the legality of something over the ethics of doing it. I mean, yes, it may be legal for you to have taken over the funding like that, according to Donna, but it's the ethics that ought to take the preeminence, because ethics guide you when there aren't laws.
Well, see, in order to be guided by ethics, you have to possess ethics.
That's right.
And the problem is that, you know, when you're around the Clintons going all the way back to Arkansas, I have to believe that the way they assess their risks is not necessarily what's legal or illegal or ethical and unethical. They assess their risks. What can we get away with?
Yes.
And they've gotten away with everything.
Yep.
So there's almost nothing that restrains them. And the fact is, Hillary Clinton had every advantage against Bernie Sanders. More money, more of the big endorsements, more everything. But with Hillary Clinton, that wasn't enough.
No.
She has to fix it. And it was the same in the general election, obviously, because Hillary Clinton felt the need to launder what we know are over $10 million, maybe $12 million, to pay for a dossier to try to damage Donald Trump. It is amazing, really almost a miracle, that with all of this and with the entire media on her side, that she was defeated when virtually every expert said she was going to win. And even the Republican establishment had set themselves up for that win and expected it.
Well, and and looking what she did with the funding there, she moved a lot of what she did was they swept up all of that money that was being collected at the state levels. And the state parties actually got very little as a result of that. But most of it, you know, like any socialist scheme, all of that money is aggregated to the top. And so the people at the top are making these massive salaries and rewarding themselves. And yet the people at the bottom, the states, get very little. What are your thoughts on that from a lawyer's standpoint? I mean, is there anything hinky on that?
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, election law is a very arcane subject. But you can see, obviously, that our election system is not set up to have fixed primaries. I mean, if it were, then there's something wrong with our regulations and laws. But yeah. I honestly believe, looking at the situation, that this was that this violated campaign finance law. Yeah. And I, you know, so far the Federal Election Commission is mum on the subject. I mean, all they basically won't reveal publicly whether they're looking into this or not.
Yeah, well, it certainly seems like it ought to be illegal. And would it surprise anybody if the Clintons had found a way around the law? James, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been a fascinating discussion.
Thanks for having me.
Landmark Pacific is known for their outstanding steel buildings and general contracting. But did you know that they're also a fantastic choice to maintain your existing building? When new construction isn't an option, maintaining your existing pre-engineered steel building is absolutely imperative. Incorrect materials can greatly reduce the life of your metal roof. For metal re-roofs, repairs, or additions and remodels, call the experts at Landmark Pacific, 503-743-3256. That's 503-743-3256. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're going to talk now to Dr. Tim Ball. He's a retired professor from the University of Winnipeg, a geography and historical climatologist. But he is best known for his public opposition to the so-called scientific consensus and the global warming controversy. Dr. Tim, it's always an honor to talk to you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, as always.
Yeah, you know, longtime listeners of iSpy know that you have been fighting Michael Mann in court. Michael Mann is the inventor of the famous or infamous hockey stick graph that Al Gore used to prove climate change was happening, which was true, but only if you ignored hundreds of years of temperature data and then jiggled the numbers that you have. You know, it's kind of a scientific maxim in some way. Statistics can prove anything if your audience is unsuspecting and you get to pick the data. So you also have not just that court case, but you've got two others. You just had some developments in the most recent one. Why don't you give us an overview of that particular court case?
Well, and I want to talk about my court cases in the context of what's happening in society, especially in America, and that is the use of the law to silence people.
Yes.
You saw with Al Gore and I think it was 27 of the attorney generals filing RICO, that is racketeering lawsuits against scientists or what the so-called climate change deniers. And so this is a frightening trend because the law, of course, is designed to protect people, and yet it's being used and to silence people. And there was a recent British ruling because, of course, it isn't just the threat of the lawsuit, but the sheer cost of lawsuit, that very wealthy people can silence those that oppose them because they just bring lawsuits. They can afford it. And, you know, just to get a letter from a lawyer is $400 an hour. Yeah. And so this is a frightening trend. But, I had three lawsuits, all from the same lawyer, all from members of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which, of course, is really disturbing. And in my opinion, it is being done to silence me, because I had two problems that bothered them. One was that they couldn't say I wasn't qualified, although they tried to. And one of the benefits of this recent lawsuit or case that I just came out of yesterday was that the judge ruled that, yes, I do have a PhD in climatology. And, of course, they've been putting out on the Internet that that wasn't true. But the other thing that I had was an ability to explain to the public thanks to people like you, in ways that they could understand what was actually being said. And of course, it's hiding behind that complexities of science, they, as you said, they could manipulate the numbers as Michael Mann did. So that, yeah, that's very central to what's happened.
Well, it is very chilling in terms of using the legal system to go after people for free speech, and it's spreading. I mean, we see things like over in Europe where Germany is now targeting people if they say things that they consider hate speech. You know, they first of all determine what is hate speech, and then they will go after you if they see postings in social media against the Muslims or Islam and on and on. It is very chilling. This notion that we no longer have free speech, but you only have the free speech that we tell you that you'll have. And that is horribly chilling, not just within society, but especially in the scientific methods.
Well, and that was the major thrust of the closing arguments of my lawyer in this recent case. He said, look, yes, the rights or the rights of the individual have got to be protected, but free speech has also got to be protected, and society doesn't seem to be able to find a line between that. And of course, as you know, and I think I mentioned on this program before, I believe totally in free speech. I mean, some of the things have been written about me and said about me, I mean, just horrendous. But that's what the price you've got to pay to have free speech. And I don't think there's any compromise on it. You can't say, well, oh, you can't say this or you can't say that. The minute you limit it at all, somebody is going to make a decision about what can be said and what can't be said.
That's right.
And then it's done. It's either all or nothing. And so I've always been for total free speech, that you simply can't compromise on it.
No, that's exactly right. You either have free speech or you don't. Let's go ahead and take a break there, actually, because we want to go through some of your court cases and the chilling effects those have, and also the whole controversy over whether or not climate change is happening. Stay with us.
This is Carla Davenport, the producer of I Spy Radio. As you know, fighting abortion and standing up for the unborn is very important to us here on I Spy. Recently, Oregon became the most abortion-friendly state in the nation. While we can't stop all the new laws, did you know that we can stop the state from using taxpayer dollars to pay for free abortions? We urge you to visit stopthefunding.com to sign the petition. That's stopthefunding.com.
Dr. Tim is a retired professor and climatologist from Winnipeg. He is a stickler for science and the scientific method, which is why he is known for his opposition to the, well, scam of global warming. He has several books out there, Human-Caused Global Warming, The Biggest Deception in History, and also The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science. You can find those in our store on iSpyRadio.com. Just look for the links at the top of any page on the website. So we were talking about these lawsuits that you're involved in, and I think a lot of people have heard about the lawsuit that you had there with Michael Mann and the hockey stick. Why don't you give us a brief recap of that particular one and where that stands now?
Okay, the Michael Mann lawsuit was actually the third of the lawsuits that I received. And what happened there was that I gave a presentation in Winnipeg on the whole global warming issue. It was a public presentation, and part of it involved, of course, what the hockey stick was, that how it had been produced to deal with the problem that they had, because what was happening, they, meaning the IPCC and the official alarmist position, they were going around saying that nowadays was the warmest ever. Al Gore's push, you know, the 1990s was the hottest decade on record and so on. And people like me were saying, well, hang on a minute, it was warmer 1,000 years ago in the medieval warm period. And so this was
that was because of all of those SUVs the Vikings were driving.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Oh, yes, those are long-lasting Viking vehicles, yeah. they're oil-powered vessels to put out all that CO2. Well, there's a very famous part of this story because Professor Denning, an American climatologist, he published an article, and as he said, they thought I was one of them, that is, those people using the climate to push for a political agenda. So he got an email from one of them saying that we've got to get rid of the medieval warm period.
Yeah.
And, of course, Michael Mann then produced the graph that he and his partners called the hockey stick, because what it showed was the handle of the hockey stick was the 1,000 years of virtually no temperature change, and then the blade of the hockey stick was this rapid upturn in temperature in the 20th century.
Well, so why then did he sue you?
Well, because what happened was that after the presentation, I was asked about Michael Mann and what I thought, and I flippantly said, well, you know, he's at Penn State, but it's probably should be at State 10. And within 12 hours, I got a lawsuit from the same lawyer that had already sued me for two previous clients. And I mean, it was a flippant remark and really,
apparently in Canada, you can't crack a joke anymore. Where does that case currently stand?
At this point, we have got it almost to the point of going to trial. And then, in fact, it was scheduled for trial on 20th of February of this year. And then Mann and his attorney moved for an adjournment, that is a postponement. And in Canada, the courts will always grant an adjournment before a trial, hoping for a pretrial settlement. And we were opposed to the adjournment, but we really had no choice. So what we did was we said, okay, we'll agree to the adjournment, but you must produce the documents and the computer codes that you used to create this hockey stick. Now, other people have tried to get these. Cuccinelli, the attorney general in the state of Virginia, tried to get these in court, and Mann avoided it by getting the court to rule that this was his intellectual property, that he didn't have to share it with anybody. But the problem with that is that here is data that's been used to influence the whole world on energy policy.
Yeah, we're talking billions of dollars. Exactly right.
Yeah.
So in terms of the court case that you just came out of, what is that case about, and where does that stand?
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. Well, this case was brought by an Andrew Weaver, who was a lead author on four of the IPCC reports from 1995, 2001, 2007, 2013. And I had written an article saying that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change had set climate research back 30 years because, of course, they directed all of the government funding and research only to proving that humans were causing global warming. Well, we were much further ahead on this 30 years ago, and so I wrote this article about this and said in an interview I'd had with Weaver that it became apparent to me that he didn't know an awful lot about climate. And he immediately sued me for defamation, and that's what this case was about that I just came out of in Vancouver.
Wow. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break. We're going to wrap things up with Dr. Tim after this. And welcome back. Our final segment now on iSpy Radio. We're talking today to Dr. Tim Ball to get caught up on his court cases. He is being sued for his for exercising free speech and having a different opinion on climate change. You know, it's really shocking in a way that you're even being sued. I mean, that questioning things is the whole basis of science, and yet here they are suing you for defamation. So let's continue on that last one.
Yeah.
That last court case with Weaver. So where does that stand right now?
Well, it stands at the point of the judges are going to have to make a ruling about whether I defamed him or not. And of course, that's going to be a real challenge. I think that my lawyer made a good enough case on the basis primarily of free speech. And but there's a much wider issue with that than the free speech, because what's happened here is that the most of the people pushing the global warming issue are bureaucratic scientists.
Yes.
And of course, that's a complete contradiction, because you see it right now where there was that case with Pruitt saying that three climate people from the EPA couldn't go to a climate conference and push their own agenda. Because that was political, and so the whole thing is being driven. And this was one of the points that we made in the case, was that but probably 90% of the people involved in the official climate research are government people, government scientists. And what are they going to do? I mean, they've come out and said humans are causing global warming. Well, if evidence shows that that's not true, they're not going to come out and say, hey, we're wrong. They'd lose their jobs. So this whole idea of bureaucrats being scientists is very central to it. And of course, part of the theme in the trial we just finished was that Andrew Weaver was he was a scientist at the university, fine, but he also now is the leader of the Green Party in British Columbia. And of course, the extent to which his political views bias his science, and this was a major part of the trial as well, that it's going to cause you to not be objective in your science. And so this is a very, very big part of this issue, beyond the free speech issue.
Well, if he's a bureaucrat and leader of the Green Party, I mean, there's his new motto for that party is disagree with us and we'll bring the power of the government against you and sue you for having a different opinion. I mean, that's really shocking. Your third court case, what is that about?
Well, the first one was by the fellow who chaired the founding meeting of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change in Villach, Austria in 1985. He was an assistant deputy minister. That's the second highest level you can be in the Canadian bureaucracy of Environment Canada. And of course, you see what Maurice Strong did when he set up the IPCC. He set it up through the World Meteorological Organization, which is made up of the bureaucrats from every national weather bureau around the world. So NOAA, for example, is a very, very important part of the whole IPCC. And Strong knew that if he did it through the bureaucracy, he could then control the politicians. Mm-hmm. Because if your weather office is telling you as a politician, well, you know, here's the science of it, you basically have to listen to them. And so this was all deliberately orchestrated to put the bureaucrats in control and through them then control the politicians. Of course, if you've got a politician that's also of the same bent, that's a bonus. But in the first lawsuit with McBean, my wife and I decided we couldn't afford to fight it, so I withdrew what I wrote. And so that case went away, but that actually, I think, helped me, because then when they brought the next two lawsuits against me, the lawyer could say, well, look, this guy will fold. He won't fight. We'll just file the lawsuits against him, and that'll shut him up. But, of course, then my wife and I said, no, we're not going to be bullied anymore, and set about fighting the next two lawsuits, and that's the stage we're at now.
All this because you dared to have a different opinion, which, again, is the very foundation of science, questioning and curiosity. Dr. Tim, we wish you all the best as you proceed and go forward with these, and we will certainly touch base again with you.
Thank you. And I'll try to keep people up to date, because the whole idea of truth and freedom and the whole questioning of what American exceptionalism is all about is really, really important right now.
Absolutely. It sure is. Thank you for joining us today. We certainly hope that you're at least a little wiser than when you got here. You know, we are always at war with those who want to take away our freedoms to force their ideals on us. I hope after listening to James and then to Dr. Tim, it really drives at home this battle that we are in. It is much more than just a political battle, but a spiritual one too. Remember, those who live in darkness cannot bear the light. But that means all of us have to be light bearers. Or, as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a faith that will fall on us no matter what we do.
I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.